Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way. Welcome to the show. I appreciate you being here. We have one of the Bitcoin greats and OGs today on the show, NVK. We talk about all sorts of things, a lot of hot topic buttons. We talk about self-custody, Wall Street adoption of Bitcoin, where we see Bitcoin going. Cover a lot of ground in this interview. I really think you're going to enjoy it. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got NVK here. NVK, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm looking forward to this. Like I told you, I love your no-nonsense approach to any topic that you broach, and thought we could just have some fun going through a lot of hot topics and getting your hot takes on that. So let's jump right into a fun one. So I'm sure you saw recently, Michael Saylor made some comments about Bitcoin banks. The best way I can frame it is he more or less attacked what he calls crypto anarchists for philosophical idealism, namely around self-custody. I would love to hear your reaction to that.
I know Michael. He's a cool dude. I think there was a knee jerk reaction, and I think his view comes from a place where he wants everybody to have Bitcoin exposure, and the rhetoric around like wallets and Bitcoin security and stuff is rough, right? We all, like, people that have been in Bitcoin for a while, we come from a place where Bitcoin used to be stolen from people all the time. So, and we're all nerds. So we talk about the nitty gritty of the Bitcoin security, and we talk about, we compare projects. We call out projects that are not very secure. And I think that puts off some people. But, that's where sort of like we part, is that, like, I think it's important that the discussion still be aired and be sort of like had in public, right? We should be airing the laundry of self-custody. It's good for the, say, the hard wallets, for example, to be at each other's throats. I think that improves security for everybody. And I think most of the new Bitcoiners like him, they don't have a full picture of Bitcoin dynamics, of Bitcoin game theory dynamics.
How so?
Just because they haven't lived it, right? They haven't lived a few forks. They haven't lived existential attacks to Bitcoin. And as the woke people like to put it, there is very little substitute for the lived experience. I think that that's what's missing in some of this things that most of the TradFi people, they come into the space with belief in the legal system, belief in law and order, belief that you can sue somebody, right? And sort of like remediate things like that, like, grown-ups do, which is true, when all the respective actors that you're dealing with are in jurisdictions where you can do that. Bitcoin is a global asset. So, when you have a Jihan in China trying to, like, take over Bitcoin or something like that, like, good luck trying to sue him. Good luck trying to play this dynamics in a way that, like, we do in a common law space, right? And I think that's the blind side that a lot of the StratFi background people have, is that, like, they don't have the internet street smarts yet. I think they don't recognize how messy a fork can be and how bad it is when you have too much concentration of Bitcoin custodians, because custodians, I think I'm less concerned about Bitcoin being taken over, like Coinbase taken over by the U.S. government. The U.S. government is going to 60102 Coinbase, or is going to force Coinbase to choose a fork or whatever. I mean, that could happen. The risk is definitely there. It's not small. It's a reasonable risk. But I think the higher risk is, you have, like, Brian, with the CEO of Coinbase, is an absolute asshole who hates Bitcoin. And, he will put his weight into forks that may not be beneficial to Bitcoiners. And, will he win? Unlikely, but that would take a toll on the network, right? Like we could push back the Bitcoin, say, price ascendance that's so important for TradFi, you know, could be pushed back years because of something like that. I mean, we saw what happened to FTX, right? They were empty and they essentially printed 25% of the Bitcoin supply during their period. And you know, that price suppressed Bitcoin, right? So if you think solely in economical consequences, I think in the very long term is a non-concern, but in the short, medium term is a problem, right? You can really depress the price of Bitcoin by doing some stupid stuff, especially the larger the pile you have, right? Like, I know the plebs don't like to hear this, but you know, Bitcoin has very plutocratic tendencies, right? And the large piles will affect the Bitcoin economics in a much bigger way, right? A whale can, you know, tank the price. So if you fork and somebody dumps the other fork or dumps your fork, it's a problem, at least on the short, medium term.
Yeah. One of the things he said that sort of threw me was the question was, you know, with more custodial Bitcoin, does the risk of like a 6102 attack come into play? And I was surprised to hear him say that he thinks the exact opposite. And I don't understand how that works. I mean, it seems to me that the same with gold in the 1930s, if it's centralized, it's much easier to come in versus if you're sitting on gold bars in your house, you know, how are you going to go collect all of those?
I think there's many interpretations of that specific moment in the US history, mm-hmm. right? There is an interpretation where, you know, no single individual got arrested, which is true. Right? I mean, maybe there was one guy, I think. There was one guy. You know, there is interpretation where, you know, the banks were taken over. There's interpretation where the banks was in their interest to do what they did. Like, it's not clear, and it's not crystal the way that folks like to put it. There's many ways of looking at that event. You know, the joys of history are, you know, they're never written as it was, right? So, if you want to take the perspective that individuals are not at risk, I think you could say that is true if they have self-custody. But then that makes the case for self-custody.
Right.
The banks did, you know, get taken over-ish or were at playing with the government at the time. So, you know, large piles centralized are not a great idea because state actors don't tend to act rationally, right? Like economically rationally, right? So, you know, you can look in periods where, you know, for example, the Emperor of Japan said, you know, people can't eat meat in Japan. Everybody got tiny. And then they saw the Portuguese come in, you know, I think 1400s. And then they're like, man, these guys are huge. We need to start giving our people meat or we're going to lose the next war or whatever, right? Like, it's not rational. I think you have to discount the economic risk that governments pose to Bitcoin, and you have to play with that risk, right? Like you have to have more countries having people have Bitcoin. I mean, personally, I don't want any countries to have Bitcoin themselves. I don't want any governments to have any money. Hopefully we don't have governments anymore in the way as we understand it. But having independent actors have a lot of Bitcoin is a great thing, right? Like a company, like MicroStrategy. I'm a stockholder. It's fantastic. You know, we want independent players having piles, right? Because they will play against each other more rationally than governments would.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what do you think then? So something I've said now, like I disagree with some of the comments that Saylor made related to, like, it felt like he was sort of attacking self-custody. He backpedaled on that to the extent that he directly was. But, you know, do you anticipate, though, like in a free market in the future, Bitcoin banks and large custodians being a huge piece of the puzzle?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah, like that's sort of inevitable in your mind.
Yeah, I mean, like, the reality is, again, another non-pleasant reality is that Bitcoin is going to become economically non-viable for the average person, right? So, you know, you are early. You can buy Bitcoin on layer one, right? You can have base layer real Bitcoin in your cold card, right? That's not going to be true in a few years from now. You know, maybe it's 5 years, maybe it's a decade, maybe it's 2 decades, whatever. But it's not more than that. Like it's very near future. You know, the transactions on base layer will be economically very expensive, right? Because the density of that transaction is going to be very high. Like your little UTXO is going to be worth $1 million, right? So, you know, the fees will be respectively like go up with it too. So, you know, Bitcoin is not for poor people. Like it will tremendously help poor people, help unbanked people, help everybody. It's going to make the world a much better place. But, you know, like somebody in a village somewhere where they don't have money to buy food, they're not going to have base layer Bitcoin, right? They're going to have, you know, some eCash token. They're going to have, you know, even Lightning will become too expensive for that. So I think we go towards the free banking model where you're going to have large entities, large players providing some liquidity, some Bitcoin backing liquidity to these piles where people can freely and with privacy have access to the Bitcoin upside and some of that freedom, right? But, you know, there's only 2 quadrillion sats. If you divide 2 quadrillion sats by, you know, 9 billion people, I did the math the other day. I'm not going to do it here, but, you know, like there's just not enough Bitcoin, you know, and remember, like, you know, right now a basis point of the world population has, I think it's like 50 or 80% of all of the world's wealth, right? That's not going to change much because they're very productive and they have access to quintillionaire tools, right? But let's say we improve 100x, right? That's now 1% of the world's population having ownership of 80% of the world's wealth. And that's 100 times better.
Right.
So like, you know, you can do the same distribution on Bitcoin, right? And you know, play out similarly. It's just the difference is that nobody can inflate supply.
Do you think that there will be sort of a single unified means by which the, you know, 7.5, almost 8 billion people who are prohibited effectively economically from transacting on the base layer are going to be onboarded to Bitcoin? Or do you think it's going to be 20 different tools and a lot of different ways that you kind of go about it? What do you envision?
I think,
20 years from now.
Yeah, no, I really think I like the concept and the mantra of 1 million mints. So, you know, you're going to have like this Wacomo, you know, millions and millions of say cashew mints, for example, right? Where it's unstoppable, right? Like you can't censor millions of mints. And people are going to have access to freedom money in that way, right? Like, and you know, cashew is just one good example, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, if we manage to come up with all those cool tools in just a few years, you know, imagine in another 20 years the kind of crazy shit we're going to do to enable that kind of freedom. So very bullish in that sense. Like we're just going to have a lot of tools and people are going to use the tools because they're not going to have a choice.
So and that's, I guess I anticipate sort of a down the road thing today. To your point, you can buy on, you know, you could buy Bitcoin, you can custody UTXOs. What would be your... like your best pitch that you would give to anyone today for proper 100% self-custody versus any alternative?
So think about it this way. Bitcoin gives you 2 upsides, okay? One upside is the non-debasement, right? So nobody can inflate the supply. But if you only take that upside, you're holding somebody else's IOUs. So it could be FTX any day now. Coinbase could disappear tomorrow. Like really. Completely very reasonable assumption that they could disappear tomorrow. It has happened 50 times over and over, you know, with regulated institutions, with AAA regulated institutions, right? Like, I mean, banks fail in the financial systems all the time. And FDICs only cover 250K in the US, right? So the other magical upside of Bitcoin is if you take self-custody now, you are the money, right? Like, you have the money, you are the signing authority for the money. Nobody can take that away from you. So why not just take the both upsides in this turmoil? We're going to be in this turmoil in the world for at least another couple of decades, right? Where things are still very up in the air where we go. Why not take both upsides and be a sovereign individual, right? Because, you know, that was not available to you before. You had to be ultra wealthy to have paintings and gold under your castle. And then if there is a war coming, you take your gold and your paintings and you leave to your cousin's castle. And then when the war is over, you go back, you make a claim, and you hang your painting and you put the gold back in the castle, right? Like, that was not available to the plebs. So now with Bitcoin, you can just fuck off.
Yeah,
you know, you take your 12 words and you go, and you have your wealth. And, you know, for the price of a cold card, it's $100. I mean, like, you have, you know, state actor level security, and good luck to them, right?
Yeah, that's what I think. Like, my case is like, yeah, number go up is one benefit of Bitcoin. And I think what you're hitting on here is just the freedom, like the autonomy that you, and the sovereignty that you have when you own the money, and you can take it with you, and you can readily vote with your feet, for example, right? Like, if you wanted to, you know, if all your wealth is tied up in the US banking system or any banking system, your hands are going to be tied when it comes to what you want to do, where you want to be, and you have no control over World War III or anything else happening. You have no immunity to sort of any collapse that could happen. Do you think go on.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, you mentioned Coinbase, you know, it could disappear tomorrow. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if Coinbase is like the biggest rug pull in Bitcoin history. It's, you know, at some point in time. Do you think that they have the Bitcoin they're supposed to? Do you have any faith in what they're doing, both for the ETFs or just retail?
You know, hang on a second. Let me just, the rain started here.
Oh yeah, you're good.
I can barely hear you. One sec. I mean, like, you know, I think they probably do have it, but, you know, like, from going from having it to not having it, it could just be one black swan event, right? I mean, we saw this with FTX. You know, like, they had the best trading API in the business. That's why they convinced so many people that they had the money, because, like, it was actually a very high quality, like, ops business. Right, like, it just, everything traded, everything was working, you know, until one day it isn't. Why run the risk when you don't have to? I mean, listen, institutions don't have a choice, right? Like, they can't just have a cold card in the basement of MicroStrategy, right? They have to have certain ways of doing things, because they cannot have single points of failure in terms of, like, people, right? And then they have to deal with the legacy system for insurance. And for just the legal governing part of their commercial contracts, right? So they have to use this sort of solutions that involved other institutions, right? But for the individual, we're way past that. For small business, way past that. Even for big businesses, you know, for a long time in Europe, even very big enterprise, they were stuffing euros in 500 euro bills in safe deposit boxes there, until they killed that bill, and they made it more complicated for them. You know, like, there really is no excuse. It's easy. It's easy as hell. I mean, if you can learn how to drive a car, you can learn how to use a cold card and do your self-custody, right? You don't take the highway in the first day. You know, you learn how to go around the block first and take your time, go slow, you know, but do it, because your wealth depends on it.
Yeah, that's... I mean, you're preaching to the choir. Like, that's exactly what we promote and support and nothing else. I'm curious then what you think about some of these, like, collaborative custody arrangements, multi-institutional custody. I mean, do you have a perspective on that?
I mean, like, everything is good, right? Options are good. Like, we need all the options, right? So, but they all have trade-offs. So, you know, like most collaborative multi-sig solutions, you have to forego privacy, either through KYC or just through sharing UTXOs, because they are cosigned, right? So there is a downside to that. You know, is it good. Most of them are good. Do you want those trade-offs or not? Like, that's a choice that you have to make yourself based on your needs, right? Like, everybody's different. Everybody has different needs. And you also don't need to have a single solution even for yourself, right? You can have maybe some goes into collaborative multisig. Maybe some goes into a self-made multisig. Maybe a little bit goes into an operational code card, you know, like maybe some goes in your phone wallet. Like, you can have like different accounts, like the same way you have like checking account, you have a trading account, you have your savings account, right? Like, it's okay to separate concerns and keep your security hygiene that way.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe my complaint with a lot of the collaborative custody models is that a lot of those trade-offs that you're talking about, and it extends beyond just privacy and sometimes reliance on closed source apps, and like there are yes. a whole lot of, and I think obviously the marketing teams don't talk about that. You know,
the marketing is pretty rough right now. I mean, and one of the reasons why there's so much toxicity in the arguing on Twitter about these things is because the marketing doesn't really cover the trade-offs, right? Like, it's not ideal.
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair, like, the trade-off for self-custody is you can't lose you can't lose your seed phrase. You can't lose your passphrase. You know, in my view, though, that is a lot easier to copy and share with people who you trust and geographically disperse, or, you know, keep in your home if you're not near a flood zone or on a fault line for, you know, susceptible to earthquakes or things like that where you could physically lose it. It's very easy to have backups. And I think passphrases, for example, are a really good way of, not only adding to security, but sort of redundancy.
It's superpower.
Yeah. Oh, it really is. So when I started working to the Bitcoin way earlier this year, I was a client of theirs prior. I hadn't even heard of passphrases. And I have a suspicion there are a lot of people who don't realize some of the flexibility and the just the utility of the tools that, you know, you've integrated to your products and that. I think when it comes to like multi-institutional, I agree with you. I think the free market should play out. I think people just need to understand these trade-offs. Multi-institutional custody makes me more nervous because it's typically you don't hold any keys. You don't have control of your Bitcoin. To me, I see a value in something like that, probably more exclusively for corporations. For MicroStrategy can't have a cold card sitting in their, you know, in the basement of one of their offices and rely on that. So, you know, I understand, you know, some of the compromises that you have to make to allow for, you know, Michael Saylor won't always be at MicroStrategy. Their finance team probably needs access to this in some form or fashion. But again, I think it's a lot of trade-offs that just go undiscussed. And to your point earlier, the fact that we can kind of beat each other up over these things, I think is important because, we're going to land on something in the free market over the coming years that goes mainstream, and it's important that people understand what exactly they're getting into. But we'll just see. I'm curious, as someone who makes a very popular, very robust, I love your product, we love your products, do you think we need more cold wallets on the market? There are really a handful that kind of meet our criteria, that we would ever support. Do you think there's a need for more optionality?
So, like, you know, like, I'm still waiting for like a good competitor. I get asked a lot, like, which other competitors would you use in a multi-vendor multi-sig? I used to recommend Ledger because I know the team there and they're serious people. But you know, they have that backup your seat in the cloud as part of the setup, and like, that threw me off completely.
Yeah.
It's kind of brutal out there. I mean, you know, like, it's we need more options. I'd like a good competitor, and I think we would do better if we had something else come to market. I think the BitKey guys from Block are interesting. You know, major trade-offs, right? No screen, no seed. It's like, it's a great step from your Klaus Schwab account, you know, but that's, it's not a sovereign person kind of solution, right? I have competitors that you know, use USB. They still don't understand, you know, like, and they write articles about like how the USB is okay. And it's not okay. You know, like, so I'm still dealing with like very sort of like low grade kind of competitor. I really want better stuff out there. I think there is room. I think the guys from Crooks are doing a good job in terms of DIY. I think they're going in an interesting direction. I think we need DIY open source wallets in case, you know, governments don't let you have them in whatever jurisdiction you live. I don't think that's an American problem. You know, it would be a Nigerian problem, not a problem in America. But I also don't think the Nigerian pocket really needs, you know, as a hardware wallet the same way that American pocket needs. You know, it's a different economical capacity. But it's important. You know, it is important. And we need people trying to do different things. Like, try to come up something else. I think there's a lot of cool stuff being worked on Frost. Maybe that removes the need of hardware wallets. And then you just need one to generate keys, but then you can de-risk enough the keys. Anyways, it's a whole rabbit hole.
No, it's an interesting conversation. What I think concerns me moving into the future is I think we're kind of past the, if you look at like the adoption curve, like the typical, you know, technology adoption curve, I think we're past the innovators. We're into like this early majority.
Yes.
The non-cypherpunk type. I mean, folks like myself, candidly. And what I'm concerned about is that we're going to be moving into the, like the late majority here pretty soon. And it's going to be more, it's going to be a less technical crowd, a less idealistic crowd that is maybe willing to compromise in part because they just are, and in part because maybe they don't understand. And my concern is that we're going to get a lot of products that are going to have like, you know, like for example, you know, not to throw shade at Ledger, but like their, you know, their backup service to me, that sounds horrifying.
It
to,
is
to a lot of people. That sounds like, oh, good.
Yes.
If I'm irresponsible, I they're going to save me. And it's like, oh, you don't know the exposure that you're opening yourself up to. I'm worried that's only going to get worse.
You know, when we design the products, like we're designing for ourselves first, right? And we have this sort of mantra where it's like, you know, can I make it a lot easier? Yes. It's already very easy, but can I make it easier? Yes. But at what cost? Right? Like, am I going to upload your backup? You know, am I going to like have you not have anti-evil made defenses or whatever, right? Like there's all these features that like, you know, could I make the device maybe cheaper to manufacture so I have more margin, right? Like there's all these things I could do that we won't do, right? But that means, you know, I think we can only access the early majority with our products, right? Like we can't access the late majority, right, with our products. They will be end up serviced by ledgers of kinds, right? Because they will have the right story, right? That's like, here, you just press this button and all is done for you. And now what happens with those people is they don't know what a seed is. So then when they get a DM saying, hey, give me your seed. Oh, sure. Here you go. Right. And this is literally like, that's the most like common attack that there is. It's like the meat in the middle. It's like you are the meat and you're giving away your seed, right? So, you know, I think we can't save everybody, but we can definitely have networks of people that are sort of like getting more people to do the thing correctly, right? It's kind of like guns, right? Like you have your friends at the range that like explain to you that like, is it cool to print guns? Yes. Like, you know, should most people use a printed gun that they printed themselves? You know, it gets tricky, right? Like, it's a superpower to be able to do that. But like, did you print it right?
You know? Yeah.
Or like, do you have trigger discipline with your brand new shiny Gucci Glock, right? Like you need friends to like society, right? Like it takes a village to like to train people and have people be responsible with things. You know, it takes a dad to teach a kid to drive, right? And kids without dads like have a problem, right? So like, can we expand the circle? Because your bags depending on people having safe bags.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's well said. Okay. So I'm going to shift topics here. This is sort of a broader question. What do you perceive to be the top one or two threats to Bitcoin? And I'm curious to hear internal and external threats that you think Bitcoin faces. And you can sort of how you define threat or anything. I mean, whatever you comes to mind for you.
I think it's like the first one is complacency, right? We were just talking about this. Like, you know, people become complacent, their funds are gone. And if they have a bad experience with Bitcoin, they're not going to come back for a while. You know, that also causes centralization of funds, right? So you're going to have large custodians having all the coins. So the complacency is a huge one. And you can see that on Twitter, right? Like, I mean, the amount of bad advice on Twitter, it's like retarded.
It's wild. Yeah.
It's wild. Like wild, right? Everybody's an expert now. You know, they've been in Bitcoin for 6 months. They just wrote a paper on like how you should self-custody your Bitcoin, right? It's insane. The other thing is, again, goes back to centralization of funds, right? That's always a concern because that will play an impact on forks. And the forks will come.
Can you elaborate on that? So one of the things that I've, you know, and again, as someone who's been in this, who got into this much more recently than someone like yourself, you know, for like Coinbase to have a ton of coins, or, you know, MicroStrategy, I know they're custodying with Coinbase, or I think that's who they're custodying with. But what's the risk there? Because like in my mind, I'm like, hey, I'm just not going to fork to some protocol where they decide to inflate the number of, you know, coins or, you know, or something like that. What's the risk? It's just that.
Think about it this way.
We're going to have to like restart kind of like, we're going to have to go back to the fork wars basically and like figure out what the free market decides.
Yeah. But now imagine if Coinbase had 10% of the supply. Okay. That means, you know, like, and say 80 to 90% of that was individuals in Coinbase, okay? What they could do is now they're validating the which fork, which coin they're using for 10% of the Bitcoin supply. So when somebody goes buy a toaster with their Bitcoin, they're using Coinbase's choice of fork.
Got it.
Right, that's a lot of economical power, and that's on top of them having the choice of dumping or not dumping, depending on, you know, where the state of the law is by then. You know, the other fork and causing the other fork to further take a hit, right? So like it's a huge risk. So that's one. Another one is, you know, I can't really think of anything else.
Yeah,
I mean, well, there's not a lot of risks to Bitcoin aside from centralization of Bitcoin.
Yeah, it's so I guess the point is folks like ourselves who would not opt for Coinbase's fork, we might see a massive hit simply because their users are tied to whatever fork they choose.
Yes.
And so maybe we win eventually, but it might be 100 years from now instead of 10 years from now.
I mean, or we lose.
Yeah, or we lose.
You know, that happened to Ethereum, classic, right? So Ethereum forked away the coins that some guy stole, you know, if cold is law, as they like to say it, you know, a guy legally stole the money from a smart contract that had a bug on it, right? It was a decent file. I think it was like $600 million at the time. Jeez. Or something like that. You know, a hacker took the money because the contract said that he could take the money in the way that he used the contract. And then they forked the guy off. They rolled back his coins, right? And, you know, like a huge part of the network said, like, no, this is wrong. You can't roll back transactions. They're final, right? That's how most people in Bitcoin would see it. So that became Ethereum Classic, and Ethereum Classic lost.
Yeah.
So, you know, like things are not like Bitcoin is still human based, right? Like, and humans are idiots. Like we are idiots. We're monkeys, right? And we're going to do monkey things. So like the more decentralization we have in the pile, the more we're impeded from doing idiotic things, right? Because like now you have to go politic, right? You have to go convince a bunch of people in the whole world to go in a certain direction. That's a lot more friction, right? So we want to add friction to the system.
Yeah, that makes sense. So speaking of politics, I just want to talk to you for just a few seconds. We won't go way down this rabbit hole, but to what degree do you think the outcome of the U.S. presidential election is going to affect Bitcoin over the next few years in terms of adoption, regulatory environment, just overall progress?
Zero. It's no concerns. Both teams, because see, Bitcoin is a vortex, right? It's an economic vortex. So Bitcoiners are going to have all the economic power. Right. And the same way Wall Street controls both parties in the U.S. or control whatever, they're going to control both parties going forward. Bitcoiners are going to own the politicians on all sides. So it doesn't matter where you go. They might just choose a different narrative on TV. Right. Like Bitcoin is bad for the environment. And then they're going to just fix it. They're going to say, oh, look, now there is now Bitcoin is good for the environment. Right. Like they're just going to come up with whatever fucking gaslighting narrative that they need. And both teams are going to print all the fucking money and they're going to like go this direction. I mean, I guess the only existential risk to Bitcoin is if they peg to gold again, which is never going to happen.
Right. Yeah. They're going to kicking and screaming.
It's all the same.
Yeah. Until they can't. So, okay. So there aren't any, it has been interesting for me. This is stuff that for a long time, I just stopped paying attention to. And then just with my work, I kind of need to pay attention to it now. There's a huge range of narratives. So you've got Trump talking about like a strategic Bitcoin stockpile. And then you've got like the European Central Bank, Federal Reserve Minneapolis coming out and just railing on Bitcoin. It should be banned, taxed, at some crazy rate. Lynn Alden had a tweet about this just the other day. Are there any of those sorts of directions that concern you more, like governments adopting it versus governments trying to ban it?
You know, honestly, I prefer governments don't adopt it because I don't want governments having any power.
Right.
And, they're going to fumble whatever they do anyways. That's just how governments work.
Absolutely.
Unless they're dictatorships, right? Dictatorships are horrible for the people, but they're great for efficiency. Governments are broke. Like they're almost every government on the planet, especially rich governments, taxes no longer pay for government services, right? For a long time now. It's the printing that does. The only difference is that, Europe is completely broke and they don't have the money printer, right? The euro printer doesn't work because it's, essentially half of it is euro dollar. So it really comes down to the dollar. I mean, America can keep on printing and surviving for the longest time. Everybody else dies first. So that's the advantage that America has, right? But aside from that, I mean, everybody's in the same boat. They're broke. And broke people are just going to try to pay a credit card with another credit card. And it doesn't matter where this goes. It's just, dollar goes to zero.
Yeah. So do you think, I hear very different, I remember hearing Saifedean a while back talking about how he thinks that the dollar has a lot more, he's obviously not supportive of the dollar, but has a lot more staying power than people give it credit for. Do you think, though, that, in our lifetimes, in the next decade, 20 years, do you think we start to see some of the real material breakage that sort of forces a new paradigm in money and
think
Bitcoin,
of the dollar,
hyper-Bitcoinization?
Think of the dollar as a gigantic tanker, right, in the sea, right? Like 9 billion people depend on the dollar. Okay. Mm. The whole world depends on the dollar, right? The whole world depends on not accepting that the kings have no clothes. Okay, that's a lot of lending. That's a lot of inertia, right? You can't just turn that ship. Like, it doesn't work like that, right? So, there is a high risk this tanker gets taken out by a wave or by a rock or by an iceberg, right? Like, even staying on course. There is hope that somebody starts to steer it lightly into a better direction, right? It could also go in a worse direction.
Probably.
But that's it. It's inertia. The likelihood of me seeing the dollar go to zero is it's high, but it's not, it's definitely the smaller chance out of the dollar remaining what it is at least of a medium exchange, right? Because they have bullets.
And a massive network effect that I think people probably underappreciate.
it's very stable compared to everything else, because everything else is backed by it, right? Like, it's like I was saying about the euro dollar, right? I mean, every government currency that is not the dollar is partially backed by the dollar. You know, that government has U.S. bonds, that government has U.S. equities, that government depends on U.S. IP. Like, it's like, you know, Google is an enforcer, right? Like, I mean, anything that is American made and the profits go back to America, you know, is an asset to the U.S. dollar.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about something that I bet you don't really care to talk about, Bitcoin ETFs. I'd be curious if you, so obviously you've got major custodial risk. We've talked about that. I'm sure you hate that. Are there any redeeming attributes of the ETF products or of Wall Street being here?
I mean, I have BitcoinTreasuries.net, right? So like I track all this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, you know, the people will find a way of buy Bitcoin, right? If that is in the worst possible medium, which is an ETF, so be it, right? Like, you know, some institutions like pension funds, they are not allowed to own the underlying asset. They're not allowed to own a bunch of stuff. It has to be, you know, assets over $1 trillion, blah, 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 right? So if the ETF is how they buy it, then so be it. It's Bitcoin is going to be on everything at the basis of everything, right? Like through good ways of doing it and through bad ways of doing it. Like you can't fight water, right? Like it's just going to happen. So, you know, it's a net positive.
Yeah. So you would say Wall Street being here, so to speak, you would say more good that you feel more positive about than you do badly or indifferent.
I think it's not a good or bad thing. It's just a thing. Like, that's the free market, right? Like people you don't like are going to have it, and you have to learn to accept and like that that's how the system works. It's everybody's going to have it. Everybody's going to trade it. You know, the Wall Street boys are going to want to trade Bitcoin volatility eventually when they put the big boy pants. They're not used to 80% drawdowns, right?
Yeah.
But it's coming, and you have to learn to like it. Like it's not your choice.
Yeah. Do you think that volatility is going to begin to diminish, though, in the next couple of cycles? Or like, are they going to have as much volatility to trade even? I just sort of wonder with Wall Street adoption. We were just talking this morning about the BRICS nations. Russia's got like a mining initiative going on where they're going to be mining in the BRICS countries. I just have to wonder if the volatility that we've seen historically is going to continue. You know, for a period of time, I'm sure it will. But, you know, if 10 years from now, are we going to see 80% drawdowns the way we have? Or do you think that starts to be diminished?
You should never look at Bitcoin price for the price. The price is an indicator of adoption.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we haven't even started.
Yeah.
Like at all. Like, this is so early. So early. Okay? So, like, and remember, retail is a very tiny amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, like the big pockets haven't even addressed Bitcoin yet. And you know, it's just we haven't started. Like, that's the best way to look at it. I if you want to follow the mental model of the Dutch mark, right, when it broke, you know, it was wild swings, right? Like, you look at that chart. It's like the volatility went up, not down, until it was over, right? So, you know, it's very likely that we have more volatility not because of Bitcoin, but because of the state of the dollar, right? You know, it could just become completely wild because government's going to try to steer, and the more they steer, the more they cause problems, and the more systemic it becomes, and the more they fix it in the wrong way, and it's just going to become even more wild. So, in that sense, I think the likelihood is more volatility than less.
Okay,
at least in the coming future.
Yeah, we were also talking about Van. I don't know if you saw Van Eck came out with like a 2050 price prediction of 3 million a coin, and I was
they're bears.
That's what I said. The thing is, like, we don't really look at price a lot. I don't think about it, but I know it's something that's interesting to a lot of people. I just think it's such a small fraction of Bitcoin's significance is like what the price is doing, you know, in any short period of time. I think we all know it's going up. But it's like, man, these guys are making 26-year predictions. There are 1,000 variables to account for. You know, it's just like,
it's for TV.
Who's even paying? I just can't imagine someone saying with a straight face, you know, hey, this we've run the numbers and here's what we think it's going to be. Like, according to what? And you know, what are the 10 million assumptions you would have had to make to get to that point? But it's what are we at right now? We're pumping. We're just shy of 72,000, and like Twitter's going crazy over this stuff. And I'm like,
you know, it's guys. Like, you know, the price is the best and the only Bitcoin marketing team, right? Like, realistically, like outside of like, you know, the what they call it, the paranoid crypto anarchists, like people don't give a fuck. Like, I mean, people are busy like working and trying to live their lives, right? And all they want to see is that the price of their piles go up, right? So like the price matters in that sense, and every time the price goes up, it shows up on TV and more people buy Bitcoin, right? So that is the marketing team for Bitcoin, right? So in that sense, the price is super important, but you know, like the price is irrelevant because you know, like it's going to be everything and versus what? Versus dollar infinitely goes to zero. And so like, it's such an impossible thing to compare. As long as I guess like the math works for you personally in your own economics, you know, you're winning, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I just wrote an article that I finished up this morning. And I sort of talk about the adage, you know, Bitcoin's not volatile. People are. I think the problem that a lot of people don't, what most people don't realize is I outline just like in very simple terms, the notion of, you know, the halving and new blocks being mined every, you know, approximately every 10 minutes and the hard cap. And like, you have all of these things that are like open source proof that Bitcoin itself is not volatile, but its dollar denominated or fiat denominated value is incredibly volatile because people are trading, they're figuring it out. And most people don't know those handful of things that Bitcoin's just doing magically in the background. And they take that for granted. I think we're a really long way from people, especially Wall Street, understanding that. I think they're going to be way more interested in options trading and, you know, pulling clients in for number go up, but it's, I agree. What's that?
They like their fees, right? They make money on retail. It's you know, like Bitcoin is going to trade exactly as the current pocket of Bitcoin is, right? So like right now, it's a lot of people who buy equities who are buying Bitcoin, right? So like it's going to trade like an equity. Eventually, it's going to be people who look at Bitcoin as like, you know, as a bond, and then it's going to trade like the bond. You know, like it's just going to keep on trading as the biggest current pocket is.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, Bitcoin is going to probably like take a massive tank if we have a war, right? Because people think it's like not liquid like gold or cash is during a bad time. So, you know, if a war breaks out, Bitcoin is going to probably go down with the equities, right? It was just saying this until the day it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. So slowly, then suddenly,
and then poof, you know, like, and then if it doesn't, then it goes fucking mental, right?
Yeah. Yeah, what I'm hopeful for is that even the late majority, even though I think they're going to have a lot of disadvantages in terms of their sort of reasoning around how they custody their Bitcoin, what they do with it, what I'm hopeful is that we'll do a sufficiently good job of explaining some of these fundamentals, and that there'll be some education that happens that maybe people begin to appreciate it for what it is, as a form of decentralized digital money with absolute scarcity instead of a stock, a bond, digital gold, like all the narratives that you kind of hear. But we're just gonna have to see, man. It's gonna be some time. I'm curious. I think you're pretty big on Noster. My guess is you're a valiant fighter for freedom of speech. I'm curious. I think the case for Bitcoin seems to me pretty evident. Like, how is Bitcoin going to benefit the world? I think is evident to a lot of people who have been studying Bitcoin for any period of time. Noster feels early enough that I think people are figuring out, like, how are these decentralized communication protocols going to be used? What is your vision for Nostr? Do you think the Nostr protocol is even going to be like the winning protocol that we all use, or how do you anticipate the world sort of being transformed by options like Nostr?
Well, I mean, like, think about, like, so Bitcoin is the common ground for exchange of value, right? That's how we're going to do it. That's how you store value, and that's how you exchange value, right? And in order to do commerce, you need communication, right? You need to coordinate. If all the comms are taken, right, like they're all closed, Facebook's closed, Twitter's closed, you know, email is going that direction, is no longer open. There is, like, all the systems are completely taken by their corporate interests, or corporate interests are owned by governments, or governments can stop them and all these things. I mean, you saw COVID on Twitter, right? Then how do you coordinate to exchange value with your freedom money, right? It's a huge problem. And Nostr, like, really addresses that well, right? Like, it's hard. Like, there's a lot of Bitcoiners that have Nostr derangement syndrome. I just recorded a mini series on Bitcoin.review pod. We did, like, I don't know, 10 episodes on the Nostr Rising series to address a lot of the concerns. And what's really cool is that you have this open protocol, right, that doesn't have hard consensus, right, which is perfect. It's the opposite of Bitcoin in that sense. And that gives people the freedom to associate and coordinate and communicate. I think Nostr really addresses that well. Does it have a bunch of trade-offs? Absolutely, right? But it does resolve that problem very well. And it is growing. Like, I mean, the daily actives are, like, growing super fast. And so much so that we're talking about it. And we cannot have closed protocols, right? We can have closed source clients. We can do whatever, right? Like, free market. But we need open protocols for the money, for the communication, and they have to be a common good, right? And they cannot have CEOs, they cannot have a board of directors, right? They cannot have any point of capture, because it will be captured, right? Elon today might change his mind tomorrow, right, on Twitter. I know people like him now, but, you know, dude, you don't get to put satellites, like, around the earth and be a person that, like, you know, like, does not have an agreement with somebody, right? Like, the US government allows him to do that, right? That's why he's still breathing. So, like, you know, is it amazing stuff? Is it amazing tech? Is the dude amazing? Yes, right? But we cannot exist. Our freedom cannot depend on his benevolence, right? And we learned this with the money. So Bitcoin was invented, created, found, however you want to look at it, right? And the same with the comms. I feel like Nostr open protocol resolves a lot of that. And Nostr is not just for the public square, right? It's not just for you to, like, tweet, right? Like, Nostr is, like, you can do trading with Nostr. You can, you know, there's a guy making open calendars. There's all kinds of shit. Like, it's just an open protocol to exchange signed notes, right? Yeah. And it's super powerful in that sense. You have a signed message, right? In the world of AI, I mean, like, you can prove that you said something. You can also prove that you didn't say something. Yeah. That is quite powerful.
That's a really good way of framing it. Right now, if you go to Nostr, it's, I mean, at least to the extent that I've used it, I really need to get into it more, but it's a lot of Bitcoiners. It's a lot of, you know, us crazy anarcho-capitalist types. Do you think it's just going to take, like, a massive crackdown on free speech to get the masses to hop onto a technology like that? Or just over time, will we just kind of organically grow it a little bit, you know, year after year?
I mean, reality is everybody's just an inch away from having the thing that they like to be censored, right? Mm. You know, like, it's like you're looking at the Joe Rogan Trump thing on YouTube being censored because, you know, Google is a big donor of the Democratic Party, right? Like, I guarantee you that, like, you know, if we was an inverse sort of situation where, you know, Trump was doing badly on the polls and Elon banks all his companies on Trump presidency and he was inverted, you'd be probably very similar, right? Like, I mean, you can't help yourself. Like, I mean, these are humans, these are economic interests, right? And they're going to do what the incentives have them do it. And they are going to play the part that they can in order to have their interests advanced, right? So, you know, like maybe right now the Twitter thing is great for the people who like freedom of speech more center-right and more sort of like on that space, right? But we don't know. I mean, maybe they start censoring other things that we don't know. I mean, it's a black box, right? I mean, we're just taking his word for it that he's like loves free speech and that's what's happening right there. We don't know. I mean, all the commie people have moved to like Mastodon and other things like that, right? So they're not even part of the conversation anymore. I mean, that's pleasant to me because I don't want to read that shit, but it doesn't make it to be a good thing, right? Like I want to see, like I don't want to see, but I have to see the things I don't want to see, right? That's kind of how free speech works.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. All right, let's start heading for home here. We're coming to the top of the hour. Any sort of tools and technologies right now that are emerging, Bitcoin or otherwise, any sort of self-sovereignty sort of technologies that you're excited about or building on?
Yeah, I mean, like we're working on comms again. We want to get Satslink going. It's like Meshtastic and all that good sort of very nerdy freedom comms. There is working on unleash.chat. It's like privacy oriented ChatGPT like chatbot. What else? I mean, there is all the Cashew stuff that I really love. Like go play with WeCash. More people playing with it, the more we learn. Go play with Noster. Yeah, you know, it's pretty bullish the amount of like amazing tech that's being worked on. I think the black pill has been buried. We're definitely on a white pill kind of scenario here. There's just so much that like it is choice. I think if you're still sort of like stuck in the matrix and you're watching your political debates and you know if you're stuck in that universe, the world looks pretty bleak. But if you're outside of that circus. You know, like the tech is moving along very well in terms of freedom. We're having more and more choices, so things are pretty optimist.
Good. I love to hear that. All right, last question for you. This is what I ask everyone, and I know you'll come up with a good one. What is an unpopular opinion that you hold, and you get bonus points if you offend Bitcoiners with it?
Oh no, I mean I've always said like Bitcoin is not for poor people. Like you just you know it's an unfortunate like reality of math. It just doesn't divide enough, and you know we have 4 megabytes blocks. It just doesn't work. You know, it's just 2 quadrillion sats where 80% is going to be owned by few people. You know, get over it and build tax around it, build tax that helps the people who don't have access to it have access to it indirectly with other kinds of trade-offs.
Yeah, I love it. All righty. Hey, NVK, man, thank you so much. Why don't you give a handoff? Tell people where they can find you, learn more about all the things that you've got your hands in right now.
You know, find me on Noster, primal.net/NVK, on Twitter at NVK, you know, coinkite.com. Bitcoin.review is my fun pod that's not PodConf approved. Unfortunately, I keep on trying. I mean, you can find me.
Perfect. Hey, thank you so much for your time, man. I really enjoyed the conversation. Love hearing your opinions. And hopefully we can catch up again sometime soon.
Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you did, like, subscribe, consider sharing this podcast with someone who you think would enjoy it. I would really appreciate that. Check out NVK and everything that CoinKite is doing. They are one of the few hardware wallets that we recommend and support at the Bitcoin Way. If you need help with proper self-custody, online privacy, setting up a privacy phone, a Plan B residency option, go over to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free 30-minute consult. We would love to help you learn more, explain our services and what it is that we do. And you can follow us on X as well. We're at @thebitcoinway_. You can follow me there too, @theothermjordan. In the meantime, remember, stay safe, stay sovereign. Remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.